welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day. In this episode, we're going to talk about a relatively new tax in Canada. It was introduced to little fanfare in the 2021 federal budget, but we've been hearing a lot more about it lately, and for good reason. I'm talking about Canada's underused housing tax, or UHT. And to tell us more about it, we're joined by Jeff Shaw, Director of Ryan's Client Support Services Group, and Lisa McIntosh, a senior manager in Ryan's sales tax practice. Hi, Jeff. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me on today.
So, Jeff, maybe you can start us off. What is exactly the underused housing tax, or UHT? Is it a sales tax? Is it a property tax? I can't tell.
Well, that's a good question. So, I mean, to start off with, it's a 1% tax that's levied on the value of vacant or underused housing in Canada. It's really aimed at applying to people who are non-residents of Canada, so it shouldn't apply to Canadian citizens and residents.
That's a sigh of relief for many Canadian homeowners right there. Thank you.
Yep. It's so getting back to, you know, what kind of tax is it? It's not your traditional sales tax, but I think it fits more in line with indirect taxes and sales taxes because it seems to be it's administered by the GST HST rulings directorate in terms of advice or interpretations on it. So it seems to be administered under the GST HST regime. So I think that makes it fall in line with indirect taxes or sales taxes, even though it's not a tax on a sale.
Okay. And what do you think the idea behind the tax is? What is the government trying to accomplish there?
I think they're trying to make sure, I mean, we all know that there's a shortage of housing, and I think that became even more evident, you know, throughout the pandemic. We saw people spending huge amounts of money for homes and condominiums and that sort of thing, and probably even cottages and that. But, you know, we all are aware of situations where homes are not used. And I think, you know, when you dig in deeper into it, often those are residences that are owned by foreign nationals, you know, people who are not resident, not Canadian citizens. And so the government really wants to get people into those houses, if possible, to help mitigate the problem of the shortage of housing, and in particular, in some of the large metropolitan cities like Toronto and Vancouver and probably Montreal. So they're going to apply a tax to it and basically try and deter non-residents of Canada from holding these things as an investment, as opposed to using it to provide housing to people in Canada.
Interesting. I mean, you have to wonder if it'll really work. I guess the question is how many non-residents are really holding otherwise available residential housing as an investment like that? Certainly, we know some of that activity is taking place, but you have to wonder if the tax is really going to make that much of a difference in freeing up housing across the country.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical. If you're investing in housing or property, it doesn't have to be housing, but if you're investing in property, is a 1% tax because you didn't use it really going to impact it? With the rates of increase in value of homes, you know, isn't that more like a license to hold the property? I don't know if it's going to deter people. Now, maybe if the value of residential properties leveled off and stayed steady, maybe it would then, but I don't know. I'm a little skeptical.
I'm not even sure if the government really knows how many foreign individuals or corporations are holding property. And this is partly why they're requiring the reporting now. They want to see that number as well. It's informational for the government, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I guess it's one way to find out really how much of that's going on. The other interesting thing is if you are investing in residential property, normally you do want it to be available for use. So it would seem like the tax wouldn't apply in that circumstance anyway. But we'll get into that a little bit later on. I guess the other big thing to keep in mind is when did this tax come into effect?
So as you mentioned at the top, it was announced in the 2021 federal budget, but the tax actually came into effect on January 1st, 2022. So You know, it's been in place for more than a year. And I guess part of the reason why, you know, it's been silent or not at the top of everyone's mind is because you only have to report against it annually. And that would have been the first reporting was at the for housing that was held at the end of December 2022. So we're only now having to report on it. And that's kind of why it's come to light at this point in time that, hey, there might be some obligations here. That's kind of how I found out about it. I was contemplating buying a second property. And then I heard an ad about the tax. And I went, oh, I wonder if that's going to impact me. So I started to do a little bit of research. And, you know, I was kind of surprised to find that this tax came into play in at the start of 2022. So I think a lot of people might be in that same position.
The target for the UHT seems to be residential housing. But what do they mean by residential? Like what does that include? Lisa?
That would generally include detached homes, duplexes, triplexes. So generally any house that contains no more than three dwelling units, semi-detached houses, townhouses, and condos. Condo units would be included. And in the case of condominiums, it would include any common areas and land necessary to use the space as well. That at least is taken into account when determining the value. So generally, it's residences that have the private kitchen facilities, private bath, and private living area for the person to enjoy. Therefore, houses such as boarding and lodging houses would be excluded. Apartments would be excluded since generally, well, let's just say it would be apartments that have greater than three dwelling units in there. Mobile homes would be excluded. And in the case of any apartment that's in a building where over 50% of the building is also used in retail or as an office space, those would also be excluded from the rules.
Okay, so that sounds like there's a long list of places to live that would be included. And a few exclusions there. Why do you think this tax is catching so many taxpayers by surprise?
I think it's mainly because people assume that this tax would only affect non-residents, but that's not necessarily the case. Individuals and corporations resident in Canada may also be affected, and this may include Canadian corporations not listed in a Canadian stock exchange or Canadian trustees of certain types of trusts, such as master trusts, bear trusts, and employee trusts. Even though these people may eventually be considered exempt of the tax, they do have to file the return.
Okay, that kind of leads to my next question. Like, who needs to be concerned about this tax? You mentioned a couple of types of entities there where they might be excluded, but who isn't excluded or who needs to worry about the potential obligations stemming from the UHT?
So the organizations that would be included generally would be non-resident individuals and non-resident corporations, Canadian corporations that are not listed on the Canadian Stock Exchange for Canadian income tax purposes, and trustees of certain trusts that I previously talked about would be affected by these new rules.
Okay, so if you're in the group that's sort of affected by the UHT, what are the obligations? Like what should they be doing to make sure they're compliant? Jeff, any thoughts there?
Well, I think, you know, really anyone, probably aside from a Canadian citizen, needs to evaluate where they fit in the scheme. And you're going to fit in one of two categories. One is an excluded owner. So an excluded owner really doesn't have any reporting requirements or any obligations under the tax. And so the other category is an affected owner. And there, you at a minimum will have reporting requirements. You may also have to pay. So I think the first step anyone wants to do is to take a look and figure out which category they're in. If you're considered an excluded, good. Away you go, and maybe evaluate it next year to make sure you're still in that situation. If you're affected, well, that means at a minimum you're going to have to do a return. And if you're not eligible for some sort of exemption, then you're going to have to pay the tax on the value of the ownership. So it's an annual return. So you would look at your holdings as of December 31st in any given year. So in the most recent year, it would be December 31st, 2022. And if you aren't eligible for some sort of an exemption, you would have to pay the tax on the 1% tax. But otherwise, if you're an affected owner, you would be required to file the return by April 30th, 2022.
Just to clarify, Jeff, I think you said April 30th, 2022, but it's April 30th of this year for
Right.
2022,
Correct.
and I guess it would be April 30th, for each subsequent year going forward. Is that
Correct.
correct?
Yeah, sorry if I confused everyone out there. The years start to blend together. So you're right. It's for the year ended December 31st, 2022, you would file it on April 30th, 2023. What else is there to know there? It's filed not on a consolidated basis, and what that means is it's filed on a property by property basis. So if you owned 150 properties, residential properties, you would have to, and you're an affected owner, you would have to file 150 returns. So,
Wow, okay. So that's good to know. So it's basically one return per property. Is that correct?
correct, correct.
Okay.
And I guess that would really equate to like legal description, legal descriptions or something like that. So that could, if you hold more than one property, that could make the burden a little bit more challenging to comply with. Like any other tax in Canada or probably in the world, there's potential penalties if you don't make the filings. For individuals, there's a potential penalty up to $5,000, and for corporations, the potential penalty for not filing the return is $10,000, a maximum of $10,000.
So it's a pretty
So,
significant penalty just for not filing the return.
exactly. And if you had that, as I alluded to before, if you had the 150 properties and you failed to file the 150, well, that would be 150 times 10,000 if you were a corporation. That's starting to add up a little bit there.
Yeah, I can see why that's raising some concern out there for sure. Question for you, what if a property is owned by more than one person, like the property has multiple owners?
Good question. I mean, I'm assuming at that point in time we're talking about a partnership. I mean, it may not be,
I guess it could be.
but partnerships are affected owners, so they would probably have to do a filing there. I guess, one of the questions would be, is it being used as some sort of a principal residence or something like that? There might be an exemption there, but I think on my starting point is that type of a situation may create one where you're an affected owner, not necessarily an excluded owner.
Okay, so
Probably a
it's.
situation where if you're in that category, you may want to get some advice on how to go forward with it.
Yeah, I think that's good advice because there could be an obligation there for both of the owners, or however many there are, for all of the owners of a property to file their own return, which, is, again, that might catch some people by surprise. So
Correct.
you mentioned the April 30 deadline. By the time a lot of people listening to this podcast hear it, that deadline may have already passed. What would you recommend for anyone who finds themselves in that situation?
Well, there is some good news on that front. The government did make an announcement not too long ago, maybe in late March. Could have been early April. I'm not 100% sure of the timing, but they're not changing the deadline for the return. But what they're going to do is waive any penalties and interest if you late file. Now, there is a condition there, is that you have to ensure that you get your filings made by October 31st, 2023, and pay any tax that may be applicable resulting from those filings. So it looks like organizations and people who are affected owners have a little bit of breathing room here. And now they can make that first filing on October 31st, 2023. So that may be important if the organization has a whole bunch of properties, and it may be challenging to create those 150 returns like I talked about, or, you know, people just want to do more due diligence as to where they fit into this tax. You know, are they excluded? Are they affected? Are they affected and have exemptions and that sort of thing? So I think that's good news. People have a little bit more time. That said, time goes by really quickly. So, you know, if you're going to take advantage of that little breathing room, and it's not an extension of the filing deadline. It's just relief on any ensuing penalties that might occur. You may want to take advantage of that, take some time and kind of figure it out. But I would encourage you to, you know, if you're in that spot, to do your due diligence as quickly as possible and don't wait till October 31st. Halloween will come really quickly, and you don't want to have the government supply you with a trick or treat, a nasty one at that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it's good that they've offered this relief, I guess, up until October 31st. Why do you think that is? It seems like it's just going to be for the first return, like a first year measure. Why do you think they're offering that? Does it have anything to do maybe with when the information and the details about the tax came out?
I think so. I think there was really nothing available about this tax until early 2023. In fact, you know, they have published 15 underused housing tax notices, but they weren't released. I mean, the first ones were released in January, and they've been continually adding them on and updating them. Even I think last week they updated a frequently asked questions one. And so I think part of the problem is there just hasn't been guidance for people to follow to determine whether they're excluded, whether they're affected, whether they have to file, whether they have to pay. And I think based on that, the only fair thing to do was to give people an extension. Well, not an extension, to give people relief from interest and penalties if they had to take more time to figure out where they stood as far as this tax was concerned.
I mean, it does seem fair to do that in this case. Earlier on, you mentioned exemptions, I guess, as a possibility. So are there exemptions, and, you know, what's the impact of that?
Yes, there's a whole slew of them. You know, I haven't taken a deep dive into any of them, but there's exemptions for, obviously, if the place is a primary place of residence. I mean, because that's the whole goal of this, is to get people into these vacant homes, if there truly are vacant homes. There's exemptions for vacation properties because, you know, those properties are held for other reasons. And there's even there's like a questionnaire or a web page that would help you determine if your property is in specific locations where there are specific exemptions. So I'm assuming that there may be targeted relief for high volume vacation areas, like maybe the Muskokas or maybe the Whistler area, two areas where I know there's lots of vacation type properties, to make sure that those don't get captured. And so people lose the opportunity to even vacation in an area because there aren't any properties. There's exemptions for new owners. There's exemptions for new residential properties. So brand new things where, I guess, maybe in theory, you haven't had time to kind of figure out what you're doing with the property. You know, there's a whole slew of, there's probably 10 or 11 different types of use that may exempt the property. I think the key thing is going to be, you know, if you are an affected owner and you think you've got exempt use, kind of nailing it down as to whether you get an exemption or not. And that may not always be easy. And so, you know, that's again where you may want to get some advice to make sure that you're on side with the rules, particularly given that this is a new tax. And, you know, I'm not even aware that there's really that many rulings out there about the different things. I know there's a ruling. There was at least one ruling out there having to do with home builders and whether they're excluded or what, but I don't think there's a lot of guidance from the CRA in terms of practical application of the tax that people can lean on. So that may be important to note, that if you think you're entitled for an exemption, you're going to have to do some work to make sure that you really fit in there.
So if you do think you're exempt, oh, go ahead, Lisa. Yes.
Oh, I was just going to add the one other thing I did notice with the exemptions would be if you are an affected person, such as a trustee or a partner, and you are a trustee or of a trust corporation, or even of a partnership that is mainly, you know, I guess, owned by other Canadian resident trust, maybe not in the case of trustees, but other partners, that tends to also make that partner exempt from paying that tax. So I guess my point is, essentially, if those organizations, partnerships, or trusts are essentially owned by exclusively by Canadian residents, then they would be excluded or not having to pay the exemption, the tax, sorry, they are exempt from the tax.
So it does sound like determining whether or not you qualify for an exemption can be a little bit tricky. And maybe that's where, you know, a taxpayer could use some professional advice. What I was going to ask is, if you think you're exempt, clearly you'd have no liability to pay the tax. Does that mean you can just skip filing the return?
No, I believe the only time you can skip filing the return is if you're an excluded owner. You would only really look to see if you have an exempt or an exemption available if you were an affected owner. And so in those cases, you'd still have to file the return, even though the property may be exempt or there may be exemption available to it.
Okay, I'm glad I asked. That's a really good point. I think some taxpayers thinking they're exempt might think they don't have to file the return since there's no liability, but you're saying they do have to file the return, perhaps maybe to verify their eligibility for the exemption. So in theory, they could still be hit with the penalty. So that's a really good point. Thanks for making it, Jeff. I guess we should talk a little bit about how the tax is calculated. Maybe Lisa, can you let us know, how is the tax calculated? So it's, was it 1% of the value? Is that correct?
That is correct. And I know Jeff has mentioned the 1% several times. That 1% is imposed on the taxable value or the fair value of the home. So if you're going to use the taxable value, it's defined as the greater of the tax value used for property taxes purposes for the year. And the most recent sales price in that year of that property. So it's the greater of those two. If you choose to use the fair market value now, you're going to have to file an election, first of all, with the CRA to be able to use the fair market value by the deadline of April 30th, the following year. And it has to be based on a written appraisal report for the property by an accredited arm's length appraiser. So there are several conditions applicable for using the fair market value.
Okay, that's interesting. So it's taxable value. Otherwise, you're looking at fair market value, but you need an election for that with a supporting appraisal.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's probably going to cost you some money to get that appraisal too, right? So on top of maybe an obligation to pay the tax.
You would think so. Yeah, you would
think so. I don't know what it costs to evaluate property, but it's probably not $100.
Yeah, no, it seems straightforward though, I guess. 1% times one of the two values, and then I guess you would have to factor in your ownership percentage as well. But I guess as far as taxes go, the calculation is pretty straightforward. So I guess we can be thankful for that.
And I guess, you know, having dealt with a number of taxes in Canada during the years, I mean, often the part that scares me a little bit is fair market value. We always, or not always, but we often see issues where there's arguments between a taxpayer and the authorities on what the fair market value is. So I think here is another situation where we could see, you know, difference of opinion, and that may create some liabilities in itself. So I guess if you've got a third party to come in and do an evaluation of the property, it's going to be important that that's kind of buttonholed up and really nice, so that you don't end up with a discrepancy or an argument with a auditor down the road on the value of the property.
Yeah, Jeff, I think that's a really good point. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that's why the CRA specified it had to be an arm's length appraiser. They don't want to run into a situation where there's any subjectivity with the valuation at all.
Another question that maybe we can't answer today is, if you elect to use fair market value, have you just committed to revaluing the property every year when you file the return? Obviously, the fair market value could change. So I guess that if that's true, that would be something to consider as well before you make that decision. What kind of entities do you think could be caught by this tax? Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I see some U.S. corporations or even Canadian corporations that have houses and condos for their employees in various places throughout Canada for the employees to go to in the course of their employment duties with that employer. I believe unless the property is being used continuously for at least half of the year, that these are the types of corporations that would be caught under these rules. Even if there's no requirement to pay the tax, of course, like we said, if you're an affected individual or corporation, you do still have to file. So those are the types of organizations I can see being impacted.
Anything to add there, Jeff?
Well, and I guess the obvious one is if you're, and I mean, I'm not sure they're going to be, this person's going to be listening to our podcast, but if you are clearly a non-resident person, you know, someone in, I don't know, someone in Europe, and you bought a home in Canada for investment purposes, you're definitely going to get caught here. And maybe you don't even know about this tax. So it could be a surprise.
That's a good point. And unlike other taxes, in this case, you definitely have some assets or property in Canada. So they will be able to get to you and enforce that obligation. It may take a while, but certainly they will have that power. So a really good point there. Obviously, you know, we don't have time in this episode to cover all the little details about the tax. Where can someone who wants to find out more about the UHT find that information?
Well, the website has a lot of information, I believe. You know, they have a landing page, an intro page that links to their tax return as well as the election, which is the same form for the election if you want to elect to use the fair market value, for example, on the value of the home, and also links to the tax notices. So as Jeff mentioned, there are like 15 of them. They talk about calculating the tax, how to file the return, and various exemptions that are available to people who must file the return.
And Jeff, you had a comment?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. CRA website's a good place to start. I mean, they have a kind of an overview webpage that can kind of get you going, but it'll probably leave you with a lot of questions, and then dive down to the tax notices. Again, if you want an overview of the tax, you can head to our to the Ryan news pages, because we have a posting on there that will summarize a number of the things that we talked about today. So that might be a place to look, and it's got a link to those documents that Lisa talked about. So that might be a good place to start as well.
Yeah, it's nice that they put out some notices to help provide some guidance about the tax. But as we all know, that's often not enough. I guess if somebody's still struggling to figure out whether or not they need to worry about the UHT, what can Ryan do to help?
Well, that's why Ryan's here. I would say that one of the first places that you can go to is call the Ryan Tax Direct line and get our, you know, the opinion of our advisors on the line. They're available 5 days a week from 8:30 to 5. And if you got a question about this tax, they'd be more than willing to help you out with your questions and maybe set your mind at ease as to whether or not you're excluded or affected in that sort of thing. So that would be a good start. We can be reached by calling 1-800-667-1600 or sending an email to taxdirect@ryan.com.
And even, of course, after calling the tax direct line, you find out that you do have an obligation to file, even if it's your organization or an associated organization, to file a return. You can contact the sales tax advisory group. Contact me directly at lisa.mcintosh, mcintosh@ryan.com, or the principal of our advisory group, Sandra Smith, sandra.smith@ryan.com.
Okay, well, that's a lot of great information about the UHT or underused housing tax. I really appreciate your time today, Lisa and Jeff. A lot of great insights there. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on today.
That's it for this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. Please let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your questions, comments, or suggestions to events@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.